This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 9 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Wednesday, May the 30th. Should private gun sales in Wisconsin be subject to background checks? We'll talk with the author of a bill in the state legislature that would do that. The bill received a public hearing in Milwaukee yesterday, and a little later in the program with a guest who opposes the measure. And we will welcome your questions and views on the issue at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. And again, the question is, should Wisconsin require background checks for private gun sales? Spencer Coggs is a Democratic state senator from Milwaukee. He is the author of Senate Bill 104, the Responsible Gun Ownership Bill, which had a public hearing yesterday. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Looks like from the paper, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, that you had a full house yesterday for the public hearing.
Well, we definitely had a full house. This is a, as you said, a hot button issue, and it's really important to not just the city of Milwaukee that has had a lot of rampant violence, but this is important to the rest of the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah, why is it so important?
Well, it is important because what we're trying to do is we're trying to close that deadly loophole in Wisconsin law whereby a regular citizen who goes to a gun shop is required to undergo a background check, but if that same citizen wants to sell to another private citizen, there is no background check, and we feel that if I sell a car to another person, you have to go through a process with the government. That having a gun, selling a gun, is equally, if not a lot more important than that. And what we tried to stress last yesterday was that we're not trying to take away anyone's guns, and we honestly believe that no law-abiding citizen would knowingly sell a gun to a violent criminal, a convicted pedophile, or a sexual predator. So how would you know unless you went through a background check?
Yeah, so if I had a gun, which I don't, and I wanted to sell it to my neighbor who presumably wanted to buy it, I would have to do what?
Well, what you would have to do is you would, both you and the neighbor would just have to fill out some forms, and then you would go to a gun dealer who would undergo the background check, let you know one way or the other whether your neighbor is, in fact, a person who is eligible to buy a handgun.
Yeah, and then what if I don't do that? What would the bill do to me?
Well, then you would be fined, and under the current law, it would be perhaps up to $5,000 or up to 9 months in jail.
Yeah. So, what prompted you to introduce this legislation?
Well, that's a very good question. Mm-hmm. Three women whose three sons were killed by the same ex-felon. Who bought a gun illegally, because in the state of Wisconsin, a felon cannot buy or possess a firearm. They came to us, and when they had found out that that felon who killed their sons, all three at the same time, just bought a gun without a background check, they said they wanted to close this deadly loophole, and I was obligated to let them know that I would pursue this bill, because it seems to make sense to us that all law-abiding citizens have to undergo background checks anyway. Why not make that in private sales as well?
Yeah. This would, pro-gun rights people, among other reasons, oppose this bill because one reason is that the penalty is a felony, which is worse than the penalty a gun dealer would get for not doing a background check.
I'm glad you pointed that out. What we had decided to do is, because we actually thought the Mothers Against Gun Violence, which is the organization that was started after the deaths of these three young men, wanted the current state law to be heightened. And so in the draft that we came up with this session, we had made it a felony. But we also have what they call a substitute amendment to return it to a regular state law, which would make it a high misdemeanor. So the changes that I announced last night at the public hearing were that we were going to go back in terms of the penalties to state law, and that rather than make this a Milwaukee-only provision, it would be a statewide provision.
We're talking with Spencer Coggs, Democratic State Senator from Milwaukee, author of Senate Bill 104, called the Responsible Gun Ownership Bill, which would require private gun sales in Wisconsin, gun sales between individuals, to go through the criminal background check process. Currently, just gun dealers, licensed gun dealers, go through that process when selling a gun. What do you think? Is this a good idea or not? What questions do you have? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 16 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Wednesday, May the 30th. Coming up this afternoon, it's At Issue with Ben Marins. Most students cringe at the very thought of year-round schooling. After 5 on this month's Education Today, Ben's guest will explain the many benefits and challenges to the year-round education format. That's At Issue with Ben Marins after 5 o'clock this afternoon. We are talking with State Senator Spencer Coggs. He is author of Senate Bill 104, which would require that private gun sales in Wisconsin, gun sales between individuals, be subject to the criminal background check process. And we wonder if you think that this law should be extended to private gun sales or not. And why or why not? And we welcome your questions, too. We have open lines at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Coming up after 6:30, we will hear from Jim Fendry, director of the Wisconsin Pro-Gun Movement, who spoke at yesterday's public hearing on this bill in opposition to the bill. And Spencer Coggs, one of the reasons Jim Fendry tells us he opposes this bill is that it's a statewide bill and that the problem with gun violence is in a small part of Milwaukee. So this would be an unreasonable restriction against everybody in the state for so many people who are not causing any trouble. What's your response to that?
Well, my response is very simple. We had tried to accommodate some of the people who said, well, if the problem is in Milwaukee, why not make it Milwaukee only? And so when the bill was in the committee of the opposing party last time, the bill just never received a public hearing. So we decided we would look at a statewide application so that we would not violate the Wisconsin's Equal Protection Clause, which means that you having one law for one county being different than laws applying to other counties may not be constitutional. So since we were not getting anywhere with trying to accommodate people in that, we decided to make it statewide because if it's good enough for Milwaukee, it should be good enough for the entire state of Wisconsin because, simply put, if a law-abiding citizen who buy a gun at a gun dealer have to undergo a background check, why not make the same application for private sales as well?
Yeah. Scott from Rochester in an email says, this is just another law that criminals won't pay attention to. What do you say to that?
Well, I think our mayor, Mayor Tom Barrett, said it very eloquently, and that was that 84% of all guns that were picked up and were involved in crime were transferred from one private owner to another with no background check, and that 40% of gun sales totally have no background check, which shows you that the loophole is a lot bigger than we had presumed. And lastly, Mayor Barrett said that there was a poll that was taken that indicated that 92% of all Wisconsinites support background checks. So that gives us more ammunition, pardon the phrase, to say that we should go forward.
Yeah. Alex in Madison joins us. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi there. I for one think this is, you know, long overdue, so thank you for bringing this up. But the question that I have is, how would you present this in a fashion, or how would this work in a manner where private gun sellers wouldn't have an undue burden of training to recognize forged documents or to be able to do this in a legitimate manner? I'll take my comments off the air.
Yeah, a little bit of a fuzzy connection there, Senator Coggs. Did you catch that? How would you make sure that the
the private citizen is not having to worry about forged documents and, you know, has enough training to know what to do with this process.
Yeah, it was a little fuzzy, but I think I understand the gist of it. To take that responsibility away from the private seller, what you would do is, once again, as I mentioned to you previously, you would take the paperwork to a licensed gun dealer, and then they would undergo the same process they normally go with a person who is buying a gun, have them go through the background check. So the onus would be on the federally licensed gun dealer.
Yeah. All right. In the realm of unintended consequences, critics of this bill, including Jim Fendry, say, well, this could mean that if a husband and wife are on vacation and the husband's gun is left in her possession, that they could both be guilty of a felony because she doesn't have the background check on that gun if she would use that gun. That the husband couldn't give a gun that he owns to his wife.
Yeah, that example came up several times yesterday, and it doesn't really apply. What they were talking about is that what they're trying to say is that the husband transfers the gun to the wife episodically, and that makes him in violation of our proposed bill, which is not true. It's still his gun that she just used, so he still maintains possession and ownership of that gun. So that kind of application just doesn't really exist, but he's saying that the term transfer, they don't understand. And when I checked with our legislative drafting attorney, she said that state law was very solid on this point. But to make sure that people understand it, we intend to clarify in language what the term transfer does mean. And it really does mean transferring complete ownership from one person to another.
Ah, I see. Yeah. So another criticism was, even in law enforcement, if a police officer transfers his gun to another officer, that would be illegal, even in the heat of a shootout.
Yeah, that came up last night too, and Deputy Chief Brian O'Keefe said that never happens. Number one, number two. The guns that they use in law enforcement belong to the local municipality, so that ownership issue doesn't come up.
Yeah. Well, we are talking with State Senator Spencer Coggs, who is the author of a bill that would extend the criminal background check process to those who are selling guns privately, to someone who is selling a gun to another individual. Right now, gun stores have to go through this criminal background check process. This proposed law would extend that to private gun sales. Do you think this is a good idea or not? Is it about time? Or is this unnecessary in your view? What questions do you have? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. More than 100 people were gathered yesterday in Milwaukee during a public hearing on this bill that would mandate criminal background checks for the private sales of guns. And State Senator Coggs, is it all guns or just handguns?
It is just handguns. We wanted to keep away from having people accuse us of trying to do something with their hunting firearms. And so handguns are usually the problem because they're so easy to conceal. But once again, it's just a simple matter of law. If I go to a gun store and I wish to purchase a gun, I have to undergo a background check. No one is better than anyone else, and so why do some people have to go through a background check and others do not? It just doesn't make any sense to us logically. And I think the opponents say, well, we're trying to take people's guns away, which is untrue, and they say we're trying to have gun control, and it's the first step in gun registration now. Over and over and over again, we repeated that that was not what our intention was, but they just don't seem to believe us. So this pro-gun movement is very afraid of this slippery slope, and it doesn't exist. But once again, law-abiding citizens who have gone to gun stores have undergone background checks already anyway.
Yeah. So do you think, why do you think this bill might reduce violent crime?
Well, what it will do is it does two things. First off, people, law-abiding citizens, wouldn't know if when they sell a gun privately if they're selling it to a convicted felon or a sexual predator or a convicted pedophile. So you would be put on notice, and the person couldn't buy it. Now everybody says, "Well, you know, if I'm a criminal, I'll get a gun anyway." Well, not on the individual law-abiding citizen's watch, and that, I think that's so important. And in the end, there was a lady, the very last person who spoke to us. I told her, "You know, we can't stop all criminals from getting guns." She said, "If you can stop one, my son was killed by a felon who illegally got a gun. If we can prevent one more mother from having to undergo what happened to me, it would be worth it."
Wayne in Wanakee is with us. Hi, Wayne.
Yeah, hi. Good morning.
Morning.
I have a comment. I'm a Vietnam veteran, and I got mugged at gunpoint, and I grabbed this person's gun, and his partner hit me behind the head with another gun in back of me. So it was a dual mugging. My point is that if I could have confiscated that gun, I would be willing to bet that they could not trace it down because of multiple illegal or multiple transfers. In other words, I'd be willing to bet that they wouldn't have a clue who ever owned this gun initially. So I'm in fully support of, yes, as a Vietnam veteran, when you start dealing with guns, in fact, after the war, I sold all mine because of the violence that I saw. But that's me.
Yeah,
okay,
you support the legislation, though, because you think there's
Yes,
too,
yeah. Yes, exactly. Yes, yeah, this is very important. You're dealing with guns right now. You were not dealing with, like, Frisbees.
Yeah. You want to comment on his experience with Senator Cox?
Only that it's, you know, as he said, buying a gun is a very, very critical thing. It's more important than buying a car. And if you buy a car from another person, you have to undergo a process with the government. Shouldn't you still have to do the same thing with something as deadly as a firearm?
And I think we have time for Wendy in Plymouth. Hi, Wendy. You're on the air.
Good morning. I just thank you for taking my call. I wanted to tell the senator that I used to be a police officer, and he spoke earlier about the guns belong to the municipality, and in fact, we all owned our own weapons, and that was common practice. And when I got out of that line of work and went to sell my handgun, in fact, I called the local sheriff's department, and they ran a background check for me on the gentleman who bought it. And when I sold some hunting rifles a couple of years later, the same thing. I just called the sheriff's department, and they ran checks for me.
But you did this on your own, not because the law required you to do it.
There was no law, and yeah. I think there should be.
Yeah. Senator Cox.
Well, thank you for that. Actually, I appreciate her correcting me on certain municipalities. The officers do own their own guns. I guess in the city of Milwaukee, the municipality is the one who's in charge of the guns. But her point is very well taken. It is always best to know who you're selling the gun to. You may think you know your neighbor. You may think you know a friend doesn't have any skeletons in their closet. But how would you know? Yeah. And how would you feel? And what signal does that send to the public if we say it's okay to sell a gun to anyone without checking to see if they have any violence, mental illness in their background, or if they are of age?
Yeah.
That just makes common sense.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Spencer Coggs, Democratic State Senator from Milwaukee. Another viewpoint on this issue after the news. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 6:36. Thanks for joining us on this Wednesday, May the 30th. And we'll continue our public radio public hearing on a bill that received a legislative hearing in Milwaukee yesterday, as we just heard in state news. The bill, authored by our guest in our first segment of the program this morning, State Senator Spencer Coggs of Milwaukee, would subject private gun sales in Wisconsin between individuals to the criminal background check process. Right now, a gun dealer has to contact the state to conduct a background check of anyone wanting to purchase a firearm from a store. This bill would require a gun owner, a private individual, who wants to sell a gun to another private individual to have that criminal background check initiated before selling the gun. Does this make sense or not? The three mothers of three murder victims in Milwaukee say it does. Their sons were murdered by a man who purchased a gun privately from someone at the same tavern where he ended up shooting the victims. This man, apparently a convicted felon who should not have been able to buy a gun. But our guest in this half hour says it does not make sense, and he opposes the legislation for a variety of reasons, which he will discuss with you in this half hour. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. We wonder what you think of this Senate Bill 104, the Responsible Gun Ownership Bill, which would subject private gun sales in Wisconsin to criminal background checks. Jim Fendry is our guest, director of the Wisconsin Pro-Gun Movement. He spoke yesterday at the public hearing in opposition to the bill. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So what's your primary reason for opposing this bill?
Well, I think the very first thing that should be done, Joy, is to clarify that this bill is not limited to sales. It's limited to transfers, and that's what the wording of the bill says. The supporters of the bill are trying to misinform people by saying, oh, it's just sales. No, it means every time a gun, a handgun, transfers possession from one person to another, even if it's only for a few seconds. There's all kinds of existing law on this issue. And if it were just sales and not temporary transfers, that would mean that the gangbangers and the killers in Milwaukee wouldn't have to go buy guns. All they'd have to do is borrow guns from somebody else. They'd never become the owners. They'd never become subject to the proposal, or the restrictions, rather, of Senate Bill 104, because they were never going to become the owners. They were just going to have possession for a little while until a crime was committed. And this is one of the areas that we're having the largest amount of trouble with.
Yeah, the Spencer Coggs did say they were going to try to clarify that language to make it clear that we aren't talking here about a wife using her husband's a gun or something along those lines, or a police officer using another police officer's gun, that it would really be the possession that would be covered, not just someone who just, you know, uses their husband's gun.
But you see, that's the boondoggle. It can't be done. You can't have a position where a transfer from, let's say another condition, hunter safety instructors, handguns, almost all of them are legal hunting weapons in Wisconsin. And if a hunter safety instructor temporarily transfers possession of a handgun to a student, while in the matter of that course, it would still be a crime. You can't clarify. There is no way possible, either in the language or under the law, to say certain transfers are approved and other transfers are not. It's either sales or it's everything. And in this particular bill, the wording is transfers. So as you had pointed out when you were speaking to the senator, it not only deals with all types of transfers, it's far more than just sales. Plus, there's a few other things that we might look at in this issue. One of them is the cost of doing this. Currently, the cost of a background check under existing law is $8. Under Senate Bill 40, the cost of the background check goes up to $30. Under Senate Bill 104, another $5 is added. That's $35. And the dealers that would do the background check can charge whatever they would want. Right now, a number of dealers are thinking of charging about $50 for each check they do to run it through their books. They have to be responsible to both the state and federal government. That means the cost to the gun owner could be $85 on a handgun that perhaps is only worth $200. How would you like to go out and buy a new set of tires for your car, and the set of tires costs $285, but there would be this tax of an additional $100? We'd scream bloody murder about it, and that's one of the problems. Of course, you'd respond by saying, well, isn't it going to do some good? Well, let's examine what is known about gun control. About 2 weeks ago, John Stossel on the 2020 show talked about gun control and what is currently known about gun control. He said it doesn't work. He said the United States Academy of Science completed a major study on gun control, and they said they found out that there isn't any iota of evidence that any type of gun control keeps the wrong people from acquiring firearms. This includes background checks. About a week ago, an investigative reporter for Channel 4 in Milwaukee did a lengthy story on the idea of background checks, and he found that at one store in the past year in the Milwaukee area, 140 people were turned down. They were prohibited people. They lied on both the federal and state form for background checks. And after they lied and were discovered, they were asked, well, how many were prosecuted? Of the 140, none were prosecuted, none, either by the feds or by the Wisconsin Department of Justice. When the feds were asked, well, why didn't you prosecute them? They said, well, we don't have the resources. It's not that major a crime. We're dealing with rapists. We're dealing with killers. We're dealing with terrorists. We don't have the resources to prosecute people who lie on a background check.
Yeah. What do you say to those moms in Milwaukee whose sons were murdered by someone a felon who bought a gun privately and used it to kill them?
Why don't we try to find a system that may somewhat help, that will actually do some good, rather than blaming the handguns that are owned by somebody down in Rock County, or the handguns that are owned and being transferred by somebody up in Wood County, or for that matter, the handguns that are owned in the rest of the city of Milwaukee and the rest of the county of Milwaukee that are never used in any type of violence? Keep in mind, the violence is certainly unacceptable and it's tragic, and it's really terrible when you have a little girl like Jasmine Owens killed in stray bullets in a shooting. But the majority of the crimes, the majority of the violence that's taking place in the city of Milwaukee is in a small section of the city of Milwaukee, and the people involved are criminals. It's one drug dealer, one gang killing member of other drug dealing gangs. And this is what the battle is all about. It's just like Chicago during the Prohibition days. These are fights over respect. These are fights over control. These are fights over retribution. These are fights over turf, and that's where the violence is. And unless you do something to deal with that, trying to deal with the guns is foolish. Ask yourself this. If you wanted to buy a Ford automobile used, and you went to a dealer and he said, I want $15,000 for the car, and you thought to yourself, well, I'm not going to pay more than $10,000, would you give up and go home and quit? Of course not. You'd go to source after source after source until you could buy that car for the price you wanted to. Well, if a person is denied a handgun and a background check, as those 140 were in Milwaukee, do you think they never got a gun? Of course not. Aaron Diamond in his show pointed out that they went out and found guns in other areas. And this is what the government has found out as well. The United States Department of Justice put out a booklet in August of 2006. It was 200 pages long, called Violent Encounters. That's not the NRA. That's the United States Department of Justice and the FBI. They were talking about the felonious assaults on officers. They devoted an entire section to firearms acquisition. And what they found out in their studies is the criminals don't care. Criminals don't obey gun laws. They don't obey any laws. They laugh at the gun laws, and the gun laws are useless.
Let me jump in, check our weather forecast, and then take calls for Jim Fendry, director of the Wisconsin Pro-Gun Movement, who spoke at yesterday's public hearing in opposition to Senate Bill 104, which would subject private gun sales or transfers in Wisconsin to criminal background checks. We spoke with State Senator Spencer Coggs, Democratic State Senator from Milwaukee, the author of this legislation, in our first half hour, telling us why he thought this was needed, and now Jim Fendry saying why it is not. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, 12 minutes before 7 o'clock. Coming up after 7, some Democrats in Wisconsin are calling for their party's state chair to either step down or resign as a lobbyist on the side. We'll talk with someone from the Eau Claire County Democratic Party after 7 o'clock, and then Joe Winicky, the chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, will respond to the criticism after 7:30. We're talking with Jim Fendry for the rest of this hour, director of the Wisconsin Pro-Gun Movement, who opposes a bill in the state legislature that would subject private gun sales in Wisconsin to the criminal background check process. John in Whitewater, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Oh, good morning. Listen, if this law passes, I'd be happy to comply with it. It wouldn't be a problem. But I'm a law-abiding citizen, so why would I care? I just don't think that this will do any good at all. Just to draw some kind of comparison, it's kind of like if a friend got into a car and decided to drink and drive or drive fast or hurt somebody, we don't prosecute the person who lent them the car. It just makes it far, far too complicated. And I think if we do a little bit of digging, we probably might find, and I don't want to minimize this mother's loss of her son. I think it's absolutely tragic. But if we do a little bit of digging, we probably find in most instances this gun violence, there's probably more to the story than meets the eye. And I don't know. I just don't agree with it. So I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
A reaction, Jim Fendry.
Well, the caller had said exactly what our argument has been. Only the law-abiding citizens obey the laws. The criminals aren't affected. If this law were passed, and if it were still a felony, as the senator had originally introduced the bill, only the law-abiding are affected. The criminals still can go out and buy guns from unlawful sources. A document produced in 2001 and then updated in 2004, again by the United States Department of Justice, this time the Department of Justice Statistics, pointed out in their studies where criminals are getting guns. And they're saying that anywhere between the 2001 and the 2004 studies, it went from 40% up to nearly 80% of the guns are coming from illegal sources. By illegal sources, they mean other people they've done crimes with, people that they are related to, family members, and by family, this means common law people, people you've lived with, even though there's no blood relationship.
Yeah, we do. Go ahead.
The basic idea is here is the NRA has been working for decades to try to keep guns out of the hands of criminals. All the good gun control laws came from NRA. That portion of the Brady bill that mandates background checks, that came from NRA. Wisconsin's background check bill, NRA. Controls on armor-piercing ammunition, that's NRA. I could give you a laundry list that would take us a half hour to show all the things we've attempted to do, but try to get good gun laws passed that do not affect the law-abiding and only would affect the criminals, but it just doesn't work. We're going in the wrong direction, and more people are accepting the studies that are coming out and finding that every time you pass a law like this one, which again I point out is not limited to sales, it's the transfer, that when you are in control of it, the gun has been transferred. So as we've talked about before, and I want to reiterate one more time, when a person, an example here, let's say a man dies and he leaves his gun to his son, or his handgun to his son, under this bill, that would be a crime. And as you also pointed out when you were talking to the senator, who's a very fine man, just getting bad advice on this particular issue, is that a husband who purchased a handgun under the wording of the law. And let's not try and say, oh, we're going to interpret it differently. No, what's important is what the verbiage says. And this verbiage would say that if a man had purchased a gun and he went out of the house, perhaps to go fishing, leaving that gun with his wife under her control, he has transferred it. It would be a crime. Sales aren't involved.
Yeah, Bill in Peshtigo is with us now. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. I just came into the program late, and I recall Mr. Is it Coggs from Milwaukee?
Yes, he's the state senator.
Right. He was trying to put something like this in a year or 2 years ago.
Yeah, he said that he's reintroduced this, yes.
Yeah, and in 1934, a gun control act was implemented, and it really had nothing to do with firearms, but they wanted to implement it to try to regulate marijuana. And it turned out to be a failed effort, but the law is still there regarding firearms. And I just, as soon as I thought of that failed effort, I think Mr. Coggs' effort is also going to be a failed effort. There were too many other circumstances surrounding that tragedy that they're not addressing, and this, again, I hate to be repetitive, but it's only going to apply to people who aren't breaking the law in the first place.
Yeah. Thanks very much, Bill. I'm not sure I want to go into whatever marijuana regulation you were talking about. Do you have any further reaction to that, to Jim Fendry?
Well, again, the point of the caller leads to the idea that these laws are not working. Now we also have to look at, which nobody wants to talk about, the resources. Let's say that this law were passed. Remember, right now, both under federal and state law, if you go in and lie on the background check and you're caught, nothing happens. You get a free pass from both the state and the feds. Why would this be enforced anymore?
Mm-hmm.
And if it were enforced, if only 0.1% of the violators of Senate Bill 104 would be prosecuted, do you realize how expensive that would be? You'd have to have new courthouses, you'd have to have new jails, and this little, we call it in Milwaukee, the dirty little secret about the criminal justice system in Milwaukee is that they are so inundated with serious crimes, murders, rapes, sexual assaults, on and on and on, that smaller crimes, like drunk driving, get very, very little attention. There isn't room in the criminal justice system to do with it. There's a lot of sound and fury when somebody is arrested. They make it look real tough when the person is sentenced in the courtroom. But when that person is convicted and handed over to the sheriff on a misdemeanor charge, it's not the sheriff, it's not the judge, it's the corrections officers who determine whether the person even stays in jail or is released on electronic surveillance. This would be too low a crime. Again, who would be involved?
Let me get in another caller on this issue. Bob in Waukesha, hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, first of all, I don't buy this argument that having these laws isn't going to do any good. It's like, he says, well, only the criminals are going to break the laws, but that's like saying we don't need laws against burglary or robbery because the burglars and the robbers are going to break the laws anyways. You have the laws there to discourage that kind of behavior, to have sanctions against it when it does happen. And sure, they're not going to totally eliminate the problem, but they're going to help. But the other thing I really like to get your guests to talk about is this idea of why we can allow people to go out and buy these large clip magazines, 17 shots, 25 shots, whatever they are, and have those in society. This Virginia Tech shooting is a good example. I mean, you have a guy who can who's going to go out and just try to kill as many people as he can, and he can go out and readily buy a magazine that can allow him to kill 10 or 20 people in 30 seconds. How can you justify having something like that?
It's not really our issue of the hour, though, Bob. Sorry, but our issue of the hour is this bill that would extend the background checks for private gun sales or transfers, as the wording of the bill is. Jim Fendry, you put laws on the books to discourage that kind of behavior and to have some sanctions should it be violated. We have laws against burglary and other things, and criminals may disregard those, but we still have the laws.
Certainly we do. But the purpose of them is to be able to punish people there for wrongdoing. Putting laws on the books on gun control that attempt to take guns away from criminals that don't work, that cost precious resources to the state. Imagine all the money that would be spent in enforcing Senate Bill 104 if anybody even would enforce it. How much good that can do in the inner city of Milwaukee where people need jobs, health care, and other items. And you'd be spending it prosecuting some poor people somewhere else that perhaps violated that law without even knowing it, with no criminal intent. We don't keep any guns out of the hands of criminals. What's the purpose?
Mike in Athens. Almost out of time, Mike, but you've been waiting, so go ahead.
Yeah. The whole thing is that people don't really understand making these laws just ruin the law-abiding citizens' right to collect and go to gun shows, and the criminals that want the guns and want to do these heinous things will acquire them anyhow, and these laws will do absolutely nothing for them.
Does this, in only 30 seconds, Jim Fendry, hurt the gun collector?
Certainly it does. It adds, as I mentioned before, it adds a great deal of cost. It doesn't do any good. And what the caller had mentioned is very true. At the basis of all gun control laws is an attempt to turn America into places like other countries where guns are banned. Your earlier caller talked about 17-round magazines. That's just another attempt to try and... another attempt at gun control by taking certain things that are legal and then making them illegal.
Can't go into that issue now because we are out of time. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you for the invitation.
Jim Fendry, director of the Wisconsin Pro-Gun Movement. Thanks to Cheryl Gasser and Christina Taylor for producing this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.